Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language. You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
Oh yeah, I'm back.
Welcome back to Discourse. I'm Morgan Nickel, big mouth dickhead from the internet.
And I'm Dylan Reeve, other dude also from the internet and stuff.
Have a bit of a hard time actually with that intro because I still haven't separated the audio off from the video. So when I change the camera-y things, it just cuts out, which is annoying. It's really annoying. So we're going to have a very easy episode.
Technology's hard, eh?
Not that we don't usually have quite easy episodes. But, you know, most of the people that are usually on are not going to be available for probably a couple of weeks. So,
do you remember last year when we had structure and stuff? Oh, it was so strange.
Oh, yeah, I should have the sound effects thing open. I haven't even got it open.
It's all right. It's
all just, these things that we used to do that just
go
now just don't really get done. So what's aside from this Marmite thing, is anything else happening at the moment?
No, it's just Marmite. Everything's Marmite. Actually, no, the only interesting thing that's come out of the Marmite thing was John Key saying apparently we could eat Vegemite, which I think is just I think it's ridiculous.
Well, it's
clearly
true.
He doesn't understand the common New Zealand man.
It's true though.
It's not the same.
It's similar. One is saltier than the other, but aside from that, I mean, they're pretty similar spreads. We don't need
one's
to be crazy.
One's disgusting, the other's Marmite.
Both are, depending on who you ask, both are disgusting. I mean, I'm a fan of whatever dark spread I can put on, whether it be Nutella or Marmite or Vegemite, or I don't know about Bovril. It's a long time since I've had Bovril, so who can say?
You know, interesting, bringing Nutella into the mix is an interesting comparison.
Got to be careful with Nutella.
If you're just going based on colour, then yeah, sure. Nutella.
Nutella's just as dangerous as Marmite because it's...
You know what's a good spread?
Peanut butter.
Peanut butter's a good spread.
Peanut butter's great spread.
Do you know what I saw on Facebook today? Just in the right-hand column, just sitting there? A little ad telling me that Whittaker's chocolate's now making peanut butter-filled chocolate. So I haven't been to the supermarket yet, but I'll certainly be looking for it when I do go. I love peanut butter and chocolate.
I like the sound of that.
Frankly, there's not enough peanut butter and chocolate products available in New Zealand until hopefully now.
Do you need
assuming it is available and not just?
Do you need your that's surprisingly good. Do you need your peanuts to be in butter form for your chocolate peanut combination to be, you know, satisfying?
It's different. It's different to just peanuts. I think the salt makes a difference. Yeah. Slightly salted.
Oh, I think personally. Now this is where I diverge from. I think probably most of New Zealanders. I think that the best peanut butter, you know, this is not using necessarily the metric of, you know, the most, it makes me feel really good about myself, is Kraft Smooth, because it's got all the sugar and salt that all the others used to have that made them delicious. And the other ones, now it's very hard to find peanut butter that has both sugar and salt in it. And the reason they were originally added was to make it delicious.
Yeah, it is a pretty special peanut butter, that one. I would definitely agree. So, but yeah, it is... It's probably quite well suited to chocolate combining. Actually, I would have thought it's quite sweet and salty.
So I did handmade Christmas this year, and I made fudge, little boxes of fudge. Did you ever get one? Were you around to get one?
I didn't. I don't think I saw you around Christmas time, and I missed out on fudge completely.
I'm sorry about that. You went up north when I had it.
Yeah, I did. I was up north at Christmas.
So you know, it's a thing. Oh, I can move you around a little bit and make this framing just slightly better.
I was hanging out in Dargaville. It's pretty awesome up there.
Some people call it Darga Hole.
It wasn't actually... we weren't in Dargaville. We were actually just outside Dargaville, not in the, you know, not right in the big city.
Yeah. Anyway, I mentioned that because what I did was I made fudge, and one of the fudges I made was peanut butter fudge. And I used...
I remember you mentioning it.
Yeah, I used Kraft Smooth peanut butter, which, you know, probably should have used chunky because, you know, then you get the texture in. I couldn't stand it. It was horrible. But some people really liked it.
It's a good fudging peanut butter, is it?
I don't think so.
No.
But then give me a Russian fudge any day. Give it to me straight. Ooh wee. Oh.
Yeah. Suddenly I wonder what happened to the fudge shop in Christchurch that was in the art centre.
We could probably ask the chat room because if Polar Bear Farm is still there. Polar Bear Farm, Leighton Duncan in Christchurch, he probably knows if the fudge shop is down there. He says Russian fudge is the best. Yet another thing
and
we agree on.
Fudge shop yet?
No, well, once the stream gets to them, it'll be.
It's a good fudge. What else we got? we move past, so from Marmite to fudge, standard path we've taken.
I'm a fan of jam. Give me a raspberry jam. Very sweet. I used to be a three-berry chap, but now I'm a... Or four-berry. What is that? The Anathoth one.
Fudge shop is gone.
What?
The fudge shop is gone.
Oh, it's made it up into the chat room, has it? Listeners, yeah. on the podcast, I don't feel like I did a sufficiently good job to explain exactly what's happening. We are streaming live video on justin.tv as we record.
That's awesome. Because you can see two angles of Morgan and me, and I've pixelated my face. So it's a lot if you're not watching the video.
I can just put it right on the desktop, and then, there's really no point at all. Actually, it's just been mentioned in the chat room by Rosie is cool. I made a plum and peach jam this weekend, and it was a fine jam.
Sounds like...
Give me... if we're talking about plum, it's hard for me to... think about jam. I think about plum chutney and plum sauce because my mother made it a lot when I was little. And
no, I love makes it. Plum jam is one of my favourites.
Oh, wee.
Like,
plum. It's often a terribly disappointing fruit, a plum, unless it's one of those really dark fleshed ones, big and cold and sweet.
It's Doris plum, isn't it? That the one you make jam with?
Is it? I don't know what options there are
in terms of plum technology. Doris is probably the only plum name I know, but I'm pretty sure that's the... That Black Doris plums is the ones you make jam with, I'm sure.
I just realised that I haven't announced that we're doing this thing on the Twitter. Oh, I'll just retweet your one. There we go.
I sent one.
That's sufficient.
And it's brought them all in droves.
Yeah, and they're apparently leaving. Yeah, so as I was saying, podcast listeners, you get the best audio quality, but you don't get any video. And if you wanted to watch video, you'll have to go to the site, discourse.co.nz, and there'll be a YouTube embed there on the post. You can watch a video later if you want, but you don't get to interact because the people that we're talking to and about are the people in the chat room who are watching the stream as it happens. So they can ask questions and they can put their oar in, and every now and then I'll go in there and I'll read it out and we'll respond.
But you can also just listen passively and shout at the podcast. I do that. That's normally how I engage in podcasts. I listen to them, later recorded on my way to work, and shout at the car stereo.
Morgan, you fool! You're so wrong about everything. Shut your goddamn mouth.
This is quite good because this one I get to tell you that directly. Most of them I just have to yell at the podcast and they can't hear me. And then maybe if I remember later on, I tweet them and tell them how wrong they were. But it doesn't really happen most of the time. I just stew.
I need to stand more like this because that side angle. It shows off my fat.
Yeah, it's quite nice.
Fight. There we go. Now I look buff as fuck. Ooh-wee.
Yeah. Ooh. You just keep it sucked in like that. Pop your chest out.
So something that has happened this week.
What?
Was it this week that Code Mania sold out? I think it was. Was it last week?
Has it sold out?
Yeah, Code Mania sold out. This is.
I'm surely you can still. Surely if you go and find Ben and you wave some cash in front of his face, he can, he'll still get you in.
That man will do anything for money.
Okay.
literally anything.
How much? Does he have like a published rate card or something?
You know the password. It is on his website.
have a look.
Carry on.
We talk about Ben. I don't know if he's listening to us or not, but he's writing a little tech blog column thing on Geek Zone for Telecom about the Nokia, what's it called? The Nokia Lumia. Yeah. And he's got a little disclaimer at the end and it says different things about him. What he's a gadget geek and he's been developing for Microsoft tools, and he's made mobile apps for all the platforms except BlackBerry. And then he says he likes Windows Phone. He's not a Windows Phone fanboy, which is just a blatant lie.
It's obvious. It's a fabrication.
He should just admit it and own it. It's fine. It's okay. We accept that he's a fanboy. It's good.
Except he does prefer the iPhone.
Well, just the fact that he likes the iPhone doesn't mean he's not a Windows Phone fanboy.
Yeah, while you were stumbling through that sentence, I'm pleased you made it to the end eventually. Windows 8, though, you mentioned. I'm nervous. I'm nervous as hell about Windows 8.
It was funny. I went to his place the other day because he had a little birthday afternoon tea, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And
he's very old.
Yes, he is. He's well into his 50s now. I think he doesn't look it.
It's the fat. It prevents any wrinkles from popping in.
Right, yes, of course. It really fills them out. We were talking, and we had the men folk in the kitchen talking technology while the women folk were in the dining room talking, I don't know, actually.
Shopping, babies.
Shopping, babies, food. but we were talking about Windows 8, and this, an interesting tidbit came out, and that is that, you know, it's, you know, all touch-based, where it can be all touch-based. So the theory is, of course, you'll get lots of computers that have touch screens and things like that. Yeah. And someone who's intimately familiar with the touch screen industry, I won't name names, but that's fine, said that apparently there's only, because of the demands they make, it's something like eight, it has to be able to register 8 touches to be Windows logo certified. The touch screen has to be able to register like 8 touches, which basically means there's none. The only ones that do that are the really, really high-end, like ridiculously expensive, capacitive, like really expensive ones.
It's pretty
so Windows 8 is going to come touches. Out. There's not going to be any Windows 8 certified touchscreens.
Right.
Which is an
what
interesting
does
problem.
Surface require? Surface must require more than 8.
It's about the same thing. You know, it's 8 or more than 8, yeah. It's the same.
It must be more like 30 for Surface, because, I mean, it's designed to be used for multiple people. I really want something like either something like a really big iPad or something like Surface, something coffee table size. I really fancy the idea of that. Just something that... A lot of the time it just sits there and is black and passive, but maybe with a, you know, a very solid surface so you can put your dinner on it.
Yeah, it'd be fun to listen to. It'd be fun to play with.
Yeah.
Something like that. I've only seen demo videos and stuff. I've never seen a real working actual live one.
It's a bit like a unicorn really, isn't it?
Yeah, one of
or a Yeti.
Many sorts of unicorns.
Or a tiny fire.
But it's crazy because, of course, you know, it's like the one thing that Apple, well, not the one thing, but one of the things that Apple did really right when they invented the iPhone was they locked down the hardware spec and they kept it to themselves. Whereas arguably with Android, the problem is the other way around where, you know, everyone makes an Android phone and they all do it cheap and so you get, you know, crappy Android phones. Yeah. So Windows Phone went out and, you know, made a hardware spec and that's theoretically worked out well for Windows Phone. So it should work out well for Windows 8 as well, except they've made the spec a bit too high, perhaps. Make it a bit too hard for people to reach.
That's officially wasting bandwidth now. Probably should sell it. Oh, I decided that the studio cam view, I didn't like having it on me. One is enough. One is plenty. Yeah, so Apple, actually, speaking of Apple news, this isn't one of the stories in the show rundown, have decided that they are going to... buy back a bunch of shares and start paying a dividend. But I think
that's disappointing.
Why is it disappointing?
Well, I was just hoping that they'd do something insanely ridiculous with their stupid amount of money.
Yeah.
Like private army or buying everything.
They could just about buy everything.
How
many hundreds of billions in cash on hand have they got?
Well, it was basically 100 billion was the number. US dollars, 100 billion. US dollars, just, you know, spare money.
And their market capitalization went over $500 billion.
At this point, it's kind of scary, isn't it, to have a company that's that valuable and stuff? Isn't it?
I find it terrifying. That for one player to be so big and so dominant, you know, it worries me. I mean, people.
It's interesting
thought,
how non-dominant they
big.
Are, though.
Well, that's. That's true, and that is one way that they differ from the kind of the 90s era Microsoft. There are real challengers, but no one seems to have a chance of making anything better, which is a very interesting. It's an interesting position to be in.
It's not even that. It's like they're dominant in terms of how much money they make and what their valuation is, but they're not dominant in terms of products. They, you know, I suppose they are. You know, even if you say that Android has more market share, they're kind of dominant in terms of. Smartphones.
Yeah.
And the iPhone, just as a single device, is certainly more, much more ubiquitous than any particular given Android phone or even, you know, small family of Android phones. But it's kind of crazy because they're that dominant, but they still don't, you know, it's still, like, especially in computing, it's still almost a niche product. Like, I mean, you know, lots of people have MacBook Pros, but beyond that, it's pretty niche. It's weird.
Is it? I mean, how niche can we call the iPad when they sell 3 million in 3 days in the pre-order for the iPad 3.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because they stopped being a computer company. They stopped being Apple computer a couple of years ago. But it's like it's almost like they don't, you know, the computer thing is such a small part of their business now, and they're whatever they are business. It's so strange to look at a company that is worth so much and still is. I suppose they are pretty dominant. It's just they're weird. They're not like what you'd expect for a company that's worth so freaking much money.
But have you seen the plan for their new HQ? The big circular building? Looks absolutely amazing.
Read about it though. I finished reading the Steve Jobs autobiography on my Android phone. And
did you buy it?
Yeah.
Did you buy it, Dylan?
I did. Yeah, that's right.
Dylan?
Did you buy it? Yes, and you read about it, and the whole corporate building thing makes sense.
Yeah.
That fits. It's exactly. Makes a lot of sense for how Apple did business.
I think business. That, like, hollowing out a mountain and building a lair, that would suit, I reckon. That would be great.
I'd like to see that. I mean, that would have been a good use of some of their cash reserve.
Mm.
Hollowed out mountains with like tops that flip open so that they can launch their spaceships or fire their death ray.
I mean, with that much money, they could actually have a space program. That'd be pretty great. But that would just be money going into nothing, though, wouldn't it, I guess, ultimately? All right, what's our next story? What's our next story?
Actually, I don't know. I'll pepper the thing and then see.
Well, there's lots of things here that aren't really stories. For instance, I would just briefly like to talk about the real-time Google Analytics, which is currently in – do you prefer beta or better?
Beta. Or beta?
Beta? Beta? Beta?
Beta?
Beta? I prefer beta, I think.
It's either beta or beta.
Beta?
No, is this GIF? Is this GIF GIF again? It's beta. Anyway, carry on.
It's GIF.
Yeah, I know.
This is – so Google Analytics, they bought Urchin – who were a stats, you know, a web stats company. And they were quite expensive and a little bit difficult to implement. I didn't install when I was contracting for a large web hosting company in Auckland in about 2003 or something. And then Google bought it and made it free as a web service rather than something you have to install. You just add a little bit of JavaScript to your site and they give you all this wonderful analytics. But for a long time, there's been a little problem. It was a bit old-fashioned in this sense. It took a while to get your numbers. It would be about a day before you got numbers. So, you know, you'd always be looking at yesterday's figures. But, of course, they were getting the information right away, just not able to analyze it in real time, apparently.
Yeah, they just had to spend some time squishing it around and doing whatever they did.
But now they've figured out a way to do it in real time. So you can watch this little report on the site. Actually, I could bring one up, I guess. If I can do it without exposing lots of secrets. Very impressive numbers probably of the discourse site. And you can see exactly what people are searching for to find your site right now. What page they're looking at right now. You can't actually see who is looking. But you know, that's all right. How the hell do I get to it?
I don't know. It's a mystery to me.
Real time. Come on, real time.
When I stop talking, does the background noise go up? Or is that just me hearing that?
Yes, it does.
Okay, cool. I'll just keep talking forever. It bothers me immensely.
Either no one's actually on the site, or it doesn't work.
Okay, well, let's go with let's look at Occam's razor on this. Google has launched a product that doesn't work. Or no one is visiting the discourse website. That's quite difficult, isn't it?
Well, Could definitely go either way. Because I can see the chat room here that has greater than one people in it.
Right. Yep.
Not a lot of people, but greater than one. And
greater than one.
And according to Google, there's one person on the site.
Okay, so Google's broken.
Now there's two. So I think it is mistaken.
You know what it is, though? Because all these people who are on the site have loaded the page and they have been staying on that page inactively for a period.
That's it. It's the little flash. So they've set like a session. So you need to be active like every 2 minutes or something to be counted. I think you've probably
nailed it. If I click over here and then go back over here, have you got like 3 on your site now?
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. I'm a new person.
Now it's up to 5. Whoa, exciting. But anyway, the reason I was thinking about this is because coincidentally, you know, I've just had it open in a tab lately, and I put up a video this morning that I made. It's a parody of the giveaway rules changing.
A parody or a better structured video?
Is it structured differently?
No, a better informative video.
Well, it tells you what's going to happen on Sunday, that's for sure. No spoilers, but maybe people could go and have a look at it. Maybe I'll put it in the show notes. Probably I won't.
When is it going to be safe to drive again?
In Auckland? Never.
No, fair enough. That's a good point.
Just like, when is it going to be safe to ride a bicycle again? In Auckland? Never.
It's the top of the T one, you know, whatever it is, you know, top of the T.
Goes before me.
Goes before me, give way to me. See, now I've just got it confused. I know it's top of the T, something me.
Yeah.
It's not gives way to me. But the top of the T goes before me. Have you all, like, I understand that that wasn't the rule before, but
I've always driven like that.
What happened.
I've always driven like that.
Because usually the person at the top of the T is, when you want to turn right, is sitting in your way.
Yeah.
Usually you can't, they don't. The line for them stopping or where they choose to stop isn't far enough back that you can turn right in front of them.
Yeah. Yeah, unless that's you, right.
A weird diagonal, like across the. Anyway, so I think there should be some acknowledgement that this is, in fact, the case as it has been in many cases. But whatever. So you've made a video and it was immensely popular. Hundreds of people watched.
Oh, I don't even know if it was hundreds, but it was fun seeing them all. I mean, even a relatively small number on my personal site, which I've been completely ignoring for years, you know, seeing 40 or 50 people on there at a time was pretty exciting. But then with that excitement and that joy of seeing a bunch of people enjoy my thing, and then, you know, click around and look at some of my other stuff, you know, little posts I've put up over the years. but then gradually watching that number go back down, lower,
dwindle back
and
to zero,
lower, and lower. It was bittersweet.
Before my accidental website deletion sadness, there was a few times I posted articles that suddenly became remarkably popular in short periods of time.
Yeah,
and I would have loved to have the live analytics then to see how many people were looking at it. I'm talking, there was some that I mean, it's probably not that much in the case of some websites, but, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 impressions in a day. I was like, that'd be fun to watch that in real time.
Mm. Oh, I'm listening to the wrong thing. I'm still plugged into to the mic.
Yeah, listen to the proper thing.
There we go. That's more like it. Ah, delicious. Sweet audio.
Yeah, so a lot of people were criticizing that they weren't, that there wasn't an education campaign happening on the giveaway rules thing, but apparently the plan was always to leave it quite late so that people didn't start preempting it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want people giving away at the top of the T or not giving away at the top of the T when they should or whatever.
It also meant they could cheap out, not pay for so much advertising.
I think they're doing it quite. I mean, I haven't been watching a lot of TV in the last couple of days, but I'm pretty sure it's quite like they've done a big media spend for this short period of time. Like it's quite, you know, you'd be hard pressed to watch TV or open a newspaper without seeing some advertising for it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. What's this? Open a newspaper? What do you?
Open a newspaper website.
Is that Dylan or is that Dylan's grandfather?
Control T, and then you type NZH and hit enter because Chrome automatically completes it for you.
Oh, that's nice of it. So I've just been told on the Twitter by Rochelle at RI, check levels. Your sound is clipping really badly. Well, that would be because it's been turned up to suit a couple of people who've probably got their speakers turned down in the chat room. What a mistake!
It's
that
all
was.
Sorts of crazy.
I felt a bit suspicious about the whole thing actually the whole time while we were doing that.
I think what's happened is it's become more complex and therefore more prone to problems.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
I've just blindly, deftly changed the levels down a little bit.
If
it's quiet now for you in the chat room, turn up your fucking speakers.
And then Morgan will yell at you.
I might.
And it's like really being there then.
I make no promises. So what's our next story? An actual story, perhaps? Yes.
Ben's putting Easter eggs in some Code Mania white boxes. I know what's in the Code Mania goodie bags. I can't tell, but it's pretty cool.
I don't know what's in the goodie bags. I know what's in the boxes.
If Code Mania hadn't already sold out, you should totally buy a ticket, but it has, so you can't. But like we say, Ben's easily bought, so offer him money and I'm sure he'll let you go.
This audio level thing, it annoys me because over here it is beautiful all the time. My levels are crisp and clean, and out on the internet with a bunch of additional compression and through this piece of shit free software, it sounds...
There's a really good comment I'd like to draw your attention to in the chat room though.
Yeah.
And it's relevant to this. It says, Morgan has been clipping the whole time, but at least Dylan is audible. And I think that counts for a lot.
Welcome to the Dylan Show. It's Dylan all day and night.
And yes, the rule always was to give way to your right. So someone says in the chat room wasn't the rule to give way to your right, and that was the rule, and is now only the rule on roundabouts. I think, if I'm not mistaken, the only time you give way to the right now is in roundabouts or in, you know, places where there's signs that make that the case. Give ways and things.
Roundabouts are the best, except for pedestrians. For pedestrians, roundabouts are ass.
Roundabouts kind of suck when people are unpredictable on them.
Yeah. Yes, stay smooth. Do what you're doing. Pay attention and stop if you must. But aside from that, you know, commit to doing what you started doing. Indicate and go. What are you waiting for?
I quite do roundabouts.
Driving is not really a difficult thing. We don't need to make it seem difficult. A lot of people can do it perfectly fine without having any serious accidents.
It's interesting. I saw a video on a YouTube, I think it was a bunch of cars driving around a small circular track, and it was viewed from
the ripple.
Quite a high angle.
Yeah, the ripple.
The ripple thing. Yeah. Did we talk about this on the show once before or something? It was interesting how basically the drivers were instructed to drive at the same speed and try and keep an equal distance from the car in front of them. And then I think one car slowed down slightly and then, you know, went back up to the normal speed. But you could watch the ripple of cars, sort of the ripple of stuff work its way backwards. It was quite impressive.
I don't think that any car needed to intentionally slow down.
No, I think it just happened at one point.
It was a natural
car did slow down. Em Wilcox has asked you to stop yelling into your mic.
Have you ever listened to the show?
For the first time, Japanese researchers have conducted a real-life experiment that shows how some traffic jams appear for no apparent reason. They placed 22 vehicles on a single track and asked the drivers to cruise round at a constant speed of 30 kilometres an hour. At first, traffic moved smoothly, but soon the distance between cars started to vary and vehicles clumped together at one point on the track. The jam spread backwards around the track like a shock wave at a rate of about 20 kilometers an hour. Real life jams move backwards at about the same speed.
Thank you, New Scientist. That's what you're talking about.
Amazing, magical.
Amazing!
And I remember reading somewhere that when designing, when trying to predict traffic flows, they often used information or used like mechanics and you know, simulations that were designed for fluid. Yeah. So you treat traffic like a fluid, and you know, you put a small dam in the thing and it ripples backwards. So anyway, what else is in the notes? Let's have a look.
It says
you took a trip to China.
Actually, yeah, I did. I did take a China. China, it's an amazing country.
Yep.
And I've just been there, and you won't believe the things that I saw.
What did you see?
I saw sea beams glittering off the Tannhauser Gate, sparkling in the dark.
Nice.
I saw children as young as 2 years old put to work, driving taxis and buses.
Yep. Security guards with guns and tanks.
I met these children myself. One of them spoke to me through my interpreter. I'm very serious and professional. And when I was in China, unpleasant things happened. And I'm only laughing because it was so upsetting. And there's some confusing chemical response going on in my brain.
When I spoke to one of these small
2-year-olds through my interpreter, yep, Gladys Knight.
Yep.
I don't know that she was two. She told me that she was a zygote. But the others, the others there in the group with her, looked even younger.
Wow.
When I was flying with my interpreter, Janis Joplin, from Shenzhen to some other city that definitely is in China.
Shanghai. Shanghai's in China.
That's exactly right. I saw pregnant women, which apparently are one of China's greatest natural resources, cleaning the wings of the planes while we were in flight, using rags soaked with a neurotoxin called N-hexane. Apparently it prevents icing forming on the wings. And so it dries quicker,
so the plane can fly faster.
It makes for a much safer flight. But these poor pregnant women out there, they looked so cold. They hardly even had a rag to wear on their back to stay warm at 30,000 feet.
Oh, dear.
I spoke to people outside factories that make some of these sparkly, pretty electronics that we take for granted so much in the West, who had grown to enormous size because of industrial accidents, and they formed wings and claws and beaks.
Have they ever used these sparkly electronic devices that we take for granted?
None of them have ever seen an iPad or iPhone turned on.
What about one of those little like animals that have the colourful LEDs inside them? Have they seen those ones?
Animals.
With LEDs in them.
What?
Nightlights. I don't know. I'm just thinking of random things I see on Deal Extreme.
Oh, right. Deal Extreme. My interpreter. I did actually tell you a fake name. Her real name.
Yep.
Was Admiral Adama.
Okay, so I can contact her and verify this stuff?
It would be very difficult to get in touch with her. I'm sorry, Dylan.
I've been trying.
You would find many results, and I'm sure you could try and track her down. I've tried to get her to speak publicly in the West, but she fears that some of those 3.6 billion population in China that works in Apple factories, when they're cleaning the wings of planes who are being eaten by dragons.
Now, on behalf of the Discourse podcast, I'd like to say that we found some of these claims to be a little far-fetched. We've done some independent research of our own, and we find that, in fact, many of them check out. Now, while it is apparently unusual to have two-year-old taxi drivers, it is not unheard of, and certainly possible that it's something that the taxi federations like to root out, but it is possible with fake ID or through lying that there could be two-year-old taxi drivers, so we can't rule that out.
I just want to say that these are things that I saw myself.
Yeah.
And in my context, everything that I've said is completely true.
Absolutely, of course. Well, thank you for that. That's very insightful. Let's talk about something else.
Kim.com.
Yes. He's fat.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, good.
What's next?
Was there more?
Well, apparently, even though the New Zealand police, acting as militarily as they always want to, they're a bunch of, not all of them, of course, naturally, they're a bunch of fucking cowboys, those guys.
A lot of them are
insane cowboys. They just, they want to pull out their guns and be as tough as what they have seen on the TV from the States, where they have a terrible problem with police forces having gotten Homeland Security money they've since 9/11, a lot of the police forces across the US have had huge budgets to spend, and so they've spent every cent they could, and they've gotten armored personnel carriers, and they've got machine guns and rocket launchers, and they've got remote operated vehicles. Police forces with drones.
Okay, you criticize these things. Have you tried policing recently?
Obviously not.
No. So anyway,
I don't think that machine guns are required for police work. And if you have
anti-terrorism, and you never know when terrorists might strike.
Well, you know when terrorism will strike in New Zealand, and it's whenever you get sneaky French secret agents coming in at night off a yacht.
What about Maoris in the hills with petrol bombs? I deliberately mispronounced Māori there, by the way, for effect.
Well, you know, it's funny that you mention that, because we've just had a result, and there was the jury failed to come to a decision. This is not exactly breaking news on the podcast when it comes out in 2 days.
I didn't even know that was out.
Yep.
Right.
They've convicted four of them out of the 17 that were originally arrested. Let's not forget that an entire province was shut down with police checkpoints, with armed police.
Yep.
17 people were arrested on what are now clearly trumped up terrorism charges. None of them were even found guilty of engaging in, what are they called, criminal enterprise or something? This is the best that they could come up with to charge them with. The jury couldn't agree on whether that's true or not. So some of the jury obviously thought that they had, and some said no, they hadn't. They've managed to convict these people on an average of about five or six firearms charges. So that is probably, you know, maybe owning a firearm if you didn't have a license or having the wrong kind of...
Yeah, it says four firearms charges. I'm skimming through the article to try and find out what the actual charges were. But I'm not very good at that.
Yeah, and I didn't look it up. I wasn't especially interested. I think it was things like shotguns which had been sawn off, that kind of thing, or like
two of them,
shotguns that were too short.
And Te Rangi Kai. I can't read his name.
This is embarrassing, Dylan. This is embarrassing.
Te Rangi Kai Fiwida. Firia, I can't anyway. Taranga Kafria Kimara was. They were found guilty on six firearms charges and not guilty of four. Urs Signa was found guilty on five firearms charges and not guilty of five. Emily Bailey, which is funny to me because that's my sister-in-law's name, but she wasn't the one who was found guilty of six firearms charges and not guilty of four. So that's it. Basically, the four of them were found guilty on some firearms charges.
That's right.
Nothing to do with terrorism or...
And that's four of them. Four of them. After 17 were arrested and accused and, you know, quite a concerted police public relations campaign claiming that these people were terrorists.
The theory at the end was that these four were the masterminds or something. It's interesting. The bits, I didn't pay that much attention to the trial, but I saw, you know, some news reports and things. And to be honest, the stuff that was described, I mean... You know, while it was quite clear they were practicing for something, whether or not they actually intended to, you know, use the skills they were learning to overthrow the government or whether they were just out in the bush playing soldier isn't clear. But I can imagine, while they weren't, because they didn't have paintball guns, I can imagine a paintball team doing the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, they were practicing...
Or children
running around with
little fake pistols, little BB guns and so on.
I'm sure there's... I don't know.
I think the whole thing is bullshit.
Yeah.
I want the police to be paying attention. You know, if they suspect that someone is up to no good and is planning bombings and so on, I want them to pay attention. But I don't want them to lay spurious charges to justify their activities. I don't want them to lay spurious charges just to justify increasing their budgets. And I don't want them laying spurious charges in order to scare the population into giving them firearms.
Do you think there's a silver lining? Do you think that, if anything, how this kind of turned out, and of course the public reaction might make them a little more cautious about jumping ahead on this sort of thing in the future?
Well, I guess one can hope.
I'd like to assume that the police learn from their mistakes. I'd like to assume that they're not going to arrest some computer hacker or alleged internet pirate with helicopters and special tactics group officers in the future.
We've got Brendan in the chat room says that there were a bunch of charges, mostly were possession without a license, but there were a few for illegal weapons.
Modified weapons and stuff, yeah.
Or something that covers the Molotov cocktail.
Possessing those is a crime, I remember, from something. It's an unlicensed incendiary weapon or something ridiculous like that. Well,
Molotov cocktails, that's something I don't see a great deal of justification for possessing. It's something that anyone can put together, you know, given just a couple of moments. But I don't see any reason to have such a thing.
Seems kind of fun to throw at things and make them catch fire, but as a weapon, it certainly isn't, you know, it's not for pig hunting.
So Leighton in the chat room says that the firearm was awfully useful down here a couple of weeks ago in Christchurch when a loon was on the loose with knives and the tasers didn't stop the guy. Yes, and they had time to get the firearms out.
Yep. I'm pleased that they had the tasers available and they could try that avenue before they shot the dude.
Yeah.
Which is why I think people argue against the tasers and I think that's fine, but if you argue against the tasers, then you've got nothing between pepper spray and gun. And frankly, I'd like to have something between pepper spray and gun.
Well, once upon a time, what you had between, well, there was no pepper spray and there were certainly no tasers. What you had between nothing.
A shouting and a baton?
Well, talking to begin with.
Yep.
And I mean, if you don't ever have any reason to, you know, talk a person down, calm a person down, you know, when you add more weapons to the mix, does that really make people safer? Now, obviously, there are going to be situations where, you know, the ultimate use of force is called for. I think that giving them other avenues, other tools to use are a good idea. I think one thing that's preventing the misuse of tasers here is, number one, security guards can't have them.
Yeah.
Number two, no one can have them. The police only, right? They're an offensive weapon here.
Yeah, you can't own any sort
number
of...
Number two, our ones, they all have cameras on them.
Do they?
Yeah, I think so. I think that when they're presented, they...
They start recording. I mean, I know how the cameras on tasers work. I didn't realise that ours had them.
Yeah. I think all of ours have the cameras. That means that we can't get the... Some people just didn't want the police to have them because, you know, they're whatever, peace activists. And I'm definitely not a peace activist. I just don't want an armed police force, basically. But the reason I was afraid is because, you know, if you just go and look on YouTube and look at some of the police videos of the police using tasers on people because they were, for instance, too slow to get out of a car, not presenting any threat, just being annoying, there is no justification for tasing someone for not getting out of the car. And that person, of course, will have a really hard time doing anything about it because, you know, generally the courts, possibly rightly, possibly wrongly, will take the police's word over the word of a member of public.
You think that's interesting because a lot of the patrol cars and stuff in the States have cameras now, but you think that's interesting because, you know, in the States where cops are carrying guns routinely, a taser then doesn't seem like a big thing.
Yeah.
Whereas here where cops aren't routinely armed, and in fact most of them aren't carrying tasers, both of those things are still, you know, they're a substantial escalation, which is probably how it should be.
I would rather people were pepper sprayed than shot, and I would definitely rather people were tased than shot. But I would really rather, and I would probably rather people were pepper sprayed than battened. But I would just rather people were spoken to and treated like humans than either of those, any of those were used. I think resorting to force means that there's been a terrible failure.
I still think, for the most part, New Zealand's police are pretty good on that. They're not generally ridiculous bullies. I'm sure there are individuals, but the police force certainly doesn't seem to be that way.
Yeah. Well,
cops, certainly any interactions I've seen with the police, you know, that I've witnessed or whatever, have always been handled well, I think.
And me as well. For the vast majority of cases. When we had that townhouse in Eden Terrace, we had cause to call the police a whole bunch of times because we were in a very central suburb, and for whatever reason, idiots liked to have... We were right on a park, and idiots liked to do stupid things in the park. And so, you know, we had plenty of cause to call the police, and I was always extremely impressed by them. They arrived quickly. They did their job quickly. They were always polite. But I think different types of police are put into different roles.
I think different situations as well. I've certainly... The worst behaviour I've seen from police has been at protests, but you think, you know, it's... You have to have... I think it must be an unpleasant situation for the police to be in. I don't think necessarily always unfolds well, but, you know, at least that's a not common situations. And even then, you know, the protests where there's a police violence don't happen often. Most of the time when people protest, the police stand out of the way and, you know, stop cars from running people over.
Yeah. Anyway, the reason that we actually got onto police... I'm not sure how we... was Kim.com. So how we got immediately onto the...
And apparently they didn't get the right papers signed in the right way and they weren't really supposed to take his stuff.
Yeah, so basically that means that we, or our representatives in the form of the Crown / the police, stole Kim.com's money and house and property. So, you know, pretty shocking. And they also had months and months and months to prepare because I think that they've been investigating for a very long time. So this is pretty shameful.
Now, I mean, I agree, but at the same time, I understand that there is room in the law for people to make mistakes.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that they didn't have a right to confiscate his belongings or whatever. What do they call it? I don't know. Whatever.
Seize his assets.
That it wasn't that they didn't have the right to do so. It was that they didn't apply for that right in the appropriate way. So that had they filled out the correct form, they still would have got the same permission to do so. It's just they didn't fill out the correct form. They did then fill out the correct form in retrospect and deliver it, although there's been some question about whether that was okay. But apparently the law generally says that it's okay to make mistakes sometimes where the mistake is not material.
I think that, and I think that, you know, people have to be able to make mistakes. So, I mean, I think if someone speeds and is caught speeding and the officer on the ticket writes down the wrong license plate or the wrong surname or something, then I think...
Yeah, puts an extra S in or something, yeah.
Then you are not going to get off. They're just going to reissue with the correct details. And I think that's completely appropriate. Yep. But I think that when you're doing something as serious as taking all of someone's assets, you've got to do the work to get it right.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I think I'm still quite uncomfortable with what's happened in that whole case. So it's still really unclear to me how much option, how much leeway the New Zealand police and the New Zealand Crown Law had in how they handled it in terms of what agreements we're party to. For international law enforcement and things, whether they're reasonably, whether they're reasonably obliged to do whatever is asked of them, within certain conditions, or whether they do have some discretion to say, nah, piss off.
And this is something that Brendan in the chat room has just pointed out, that, and this is in the Herald article as well. The problem is that they applied for an order that didn't require them to provide any notice, and apparently that's the wrong one.
So
he's followed up, and so the difference is whether or not he gets to defend the application before it's enforced, and that does make a pretty big difference, doesn't it? I mean, that's the difference between him being able to afford he seems to have whatever lawyer he wants. But it's the difference between him being able to defend himself without us going to these insane lengths with this ridiculous military strike. Him just going into court and saying, no, you can't, I don't want you to do the seizure, and here's why. Here are the various reasons why. Here's what my lawyer has to say about, all of his claims that we've seen on Campbell and so on about. He reckons the DMCA protects him from a lot of their claims and so on. And so it would give him the opportunity to do that before this ridiculous raid. It seems to me that they just wanted to play G.I. Joe. But, I mean, they're playing G.I. Joe as our representatives and using our money.
It is. I mean, that's really unsettling, isn't it? To be honest, I don't know what the deal is. I'm sort of taking the police. Who is it? Whose word am I taking? I don't know. Someone's word from the government. I'm sort of taking them at their word that it was a procedural error. But, I mean, if it substantially changes the nature of the order they applied for, then there's... I mean, it looks like it's still ongoing. I'm trying to see if there's any sort of result. And
not yet.
It doesn't look like there is yet.
The whole thing is fascinating. Now, who was I talking to? I was talking to someone, a lawyer, a British lawyer who's been practicing... I shouldn't say how long she's been practicing here for, because it might make it possible to identify her. She said that...
Female lawyer. How hard can that be?
There's like 90% of new law graduates is probably female.
Oh, right. Okay, carry on.
She said she is very impressed by the judiciary here, but she thinks that Crown Law are a bunch of fucking Muppets. They are idiots. And that's the people who cocked this up. So there you go. There you go.
Yeah, and they're also the ones who went and reapplied on behalf of the FBI to re-remand him after his, remand was overturned. It just seems
such a
ridiculous.
Bunch of clown. It just seems like a whole series of poor judgments. Bad judgment after bad judgment after bad judgment. Oh, so let's talk a little bit about real terrorism. And in fact, a police response that I don't know if it was appropriate or not. This is,
right.
When I first saw this headline, it said 5 terrorism suspects shot dead in Bali. I thought, well,
correct.
That took them a long time to execute those guys. And then I was like, oh, wait a second. What do you mean suspects? And it turns out there is no word that I can use to describe how I feel about these pieces of excrement, excuses for human beings. 5 more Indonesians. The article doesn't say. I mean, we know they're Muslims.
Yeah.
Who went to, or some of them possibly lived on, Bali. They were in Denpasar and also another nearby city. I've been to Denpasar. They've got a lovely museum. Not, you know, not a great city, but it's all right. They went and caught 3 of them in a hotel and shot them for whatever reason. I don't know if the response was because these suspects had firearms of their own or if these local police are just really fucking tired of, you know, their region being attacked by these fucksticks. But I think that, actually, I probably shouldn't say I'm in favour of it at all. I shouldn't say that. But if these guys are bad guys and they were going to do another nightclub bombing, then I'd far rather these guys get shot now than that they get to do that. I mean, of course, that is inconsistent with other things I've been saying. I mean, you know.
Feels a bit like 24.
It does. You've got to be pretty sure. But, I mean, assuming these police went in and said, you're under arrest, and they said, no, we're not. We've got guns of our own. Fuck off. And then the shooting happened. I mean, I would far rather that they be stopped now than they get to do the, you know, the attack. Because that was fucking awful. That was, I mean, so many people died in that nightclub. Absolutely awful. And, I mean, I had crayfish on the beach in what's called Half Moon Bay or something, or Crescent Bay, maybe it's called. I mean, I've had dinner on the beach there. They set up tents on the beach. And one of these fucksticks went in there and blew himself up and killed a bunch of people just having dinner on the beach. They went into, I can't remember, what's it called? The Maharishi Center, I think, is one of the shopping centers. They went in there and blew themselves up. What the fuck? I mean, these are all places that I've been, and a lot of people have been, and people who are not valid military targets, under any stretch of the imagination, and in a region of Indonesia being one of the most populous Muslim nations, but this is the only region which is not majority Muslim. So, I mean, is it a coincidence that they're going there to do these attacks kind of out of their own areas on this different island? I am appalled by these motherfuckers, and if these guys were going to do another one of those attacks, I'm really fucking glad they're dead before they got a chance to do it.
Yeah, sure. Unfortunately, I mean, we don't know what it is. It's like every time I read something like this, I think of that the guy on the subway in the UK. And I think, you know, it's so easily goes wrong.
But, I mean, if these people are just, you know, they just were behaving suspiciously, then that's not cool. So, you know, I've got to qualify it by saying that.
When will we find out?
Possibly never, because they're dead, so you can't really ask them.
Right.
Okay, let's talk about something good.
Okay. Let me just check. Good, 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 good.
There is something good there, but I actually want to save it till last. Here's a quick one that we can get through. Newspapers.
Yep.
Wrong button. But, you know, strangely appropriate. Also the wrong button. Newspapers, America's fastest shrinking industry.
I'm really pleased to hear this, because for a while, was it post-production? Like, television post-production was shrinking.
Oh.
Just sort of what I do.
Is that because it's easier now? You don't need so many people to do it?
Yes, partly because the cost of entry's come down a lot, and the complexity's come down a lot. I think that's probably it, actually, mainly, is that anyone can, you know, spend $300 on Final Cut Studio X and, sorry, 10, and, you know, be a video editor. So I'm pleased to hear that someone's shrinking faster.
Sorry, I'm just moving your window around a little bit.
That's fine. I'm okay with that.
Let's see. We've got at the top, growing industry, renewables and environment. Miles ahead. Miles ahead. There is a huge gap, a gap of maybe 25% growth
Okay.
between 2007 and 2011. And then the second largest drug industry is internet.
Second, is it?
Online publishing. Apparently philanthropy is a growing industry. Who knew? Fourth most growy of industries. Fastest growing. Okay. That's good. But the fastest shrinking, newspapers, restaurants, warehousing, capital markets, supermarkets, and retail.
Weird.
I guess
it's just places for us to spend our money.
Warehousing, probably because there's more just-in-time stuff. So, you know, it's delivered really quickly.
Yep.
Comes straight off the boat from Shenzhen or wherever it comes from, and, you know, goes through DHL and straight to your door.
I don't know what this is related to. I suppose it's kind of related to these things. The copyright math TED Talk, the $8 billion iPod one.
Yes.
It is fantastic. Put a link to it in the show notes because it's awesome. If you haven't seen it, you totally should. It's amusing. Because according to the copyright maths, he exposes the recording industry, the content industry has lost more employees than it ever had, thanks to piracy.
Yeah, and I mean, those claims. I think that we can see just intuitively, we can tell that they're complete fabrications. But when you see them in, you know, a graph, and someone actually has gone to the trouble of looking at the numbers, it's just, they're such liars, those bastards.
It's so funny.
They're the enemies of culture.
It's interesting because it's kind of enablers, but also enemies. Less enablers than they were, but still somewhat.
Anyway, right. that was just a little one to bang through.
That's interesting. I saw something else in there. Oh, there's something about Brian Edwards that you've written in there. There is a link. There you go. I haven't read it yet. What's it about?
Good question.
Brian Edwards has been wondering something you've been wondering.
I find myself wondering, he says. I find myself wondering. This is about whether he can be bothered with the Labour Party anymore. He says,
right.
Increasingly, this is a quote, increasingly, it seems to me, the Greens reflect the philosophical and moral values to which I subscribed more accurately than the Labour Party, whose philosophical and moral values are now so ill-defined as to be beyond definition. Which actually sounds about right.
I think it's interesting because I think that's something. We should talk to Jordan again sometime because I think that's something.
He can probably speak more freely now than he could before.
Well, yeah, I think he's still involved, but I wonder if that's something he's been struggling with a bit as well. I mean, he posts a lot on Facebook, and I read it occasionally. It's kind of, I've seen a few expressions of very similar things to that. Mm. People saying that, you know, Shearer's. I understand David Shearer did a big speech the other day, which I've really paid no attention to at all. But I believe there was, you know, some concessions towards what might be considered typically National Party politics and things like that.
Well,
and
I can read another quote from Brian Edwards.
Go on.
I read that Labour's new leader, David Shearer, wants to move the party to that ideological no man's land that is the centre. National already occupies that space, but as the distinctions between Key and Shearer lose focus, both promising to deliver a brighter future, and the Labour leader ditching policies specifically directed at putting more money into the pockets of the poor, I've no doubt that an accommodation can be reached between centre-right and centre-left. The centre is a wide church.
Yeah, and it's sort of meaningless.
It is absolutely meaningless. And I don't want to vote for the centre. I don't want to vote for someone with views. I want to vote for someone with policies to improve things and actually a clear plan, you know, it's something laid out so I can see in year one we're going to do this in year two, year three, and we're not going to fuck Christchurch over completely, and we're not going to stop Auckland from getting the things that, you know, we've prevented them from getting for 50, 60 years now. We're going to stop fucking with Auckland. We're going to letting regions take care of them in some ways, take care of themselves and butt the fuck out, because what the fuck does Wellington know about anything that isn't Wellington?
Yeah.
They can fuck off if they think. I mean, because is that to help prevent you from dying under my diatribe?
No, I was just playing, just pushing buttons. All right.
I like the pixely one.
Yeah, sorry, I'll go back to that. There you go.
That gas mark is a little bit creepy.
Things that work well for the internet. Oh, for the recorded audio listeners later. I mean, ooh, no, I don't like that. Right. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. That the, I mean, it seemed that way before the election, and it hasn't improved, that they've, you know, lost their, what, direction, focus?
Yeah. Here's just a little bit more from yep. Brian Edwards. I'm not.
Can you read it in Brian Edwards' voice?
No.
Okay.
Because, I mean, he's Irish and in his 70s.
Yeah.
No, I can't. I can't do that. I can't do any voice other than my own, and I'm very bad at my own voice. I'm not comfortable with Mr. Shearer's reported intention to move the party to the centre. It's a misnomer for one thing. Labour is already in the centre. It has already lost its working class constituency. Any move to the centre will merely be, as the sharebrokers say, a technical correction. Not as extreme as in 84, but a move to the right nonetheless.
Yeah.
What Labour politics now seem to be about is finding sellable policies and a sellable leader in order to regain power.
Yeah.
What Green politics seem to be about is persuading people to come across to policies not obviously or immediately founded in self-interest, but in the long-term interest of all of us, and there's no avoiding it, of the planet. No doubt they'd like to be in government too, but it doesn't seem to be their primary motivation.
It seemed to me that before the last election, some of the national policies were... Well, first of all, they weren't very well defined, but some of them just seemed to be kind of like... You know, here's the idea that we think we're supposed to stand for, so this is our policy, rather than we've really looked at this and we think this is the best way to do it. And I think that was what endeared me to the Greens last time, is that all their policies seemed to be, even if I didn't necessarily agree with them, they seemed to really believe in them.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. Like, I'd almost rather vote for a party that doesn't quite, you know, that I don't quite agree with, that at least seems to have a lot of faith in what it's standing up for. So that I know that they're going to stick with it, I suppose.
And actually, speaking of, you know, the working class constituency and the left-right issues, one thing that I have got on the list is Morgan's solution to the ports dispute.
Okay, sure. I just, is this going to be ranty?
No, I can speak softly.
Okay, go.
I say that we take 10% of the port out of the hands of the council and put it into a trust and put it in the hands of the workers, not in such a way that they can sell it or actually individually own any of it, but then turn that into a profit share, turn that into a part of the company which they then control. They can vote for maybe a member of the board. They can you know, contribute to making the decision-making process, because they clearly want the port to be as successful as possible. And
that's the thing that, you know, everyone's like, they don't want to do anything. Well, of course they bloody do, because they want jobs. I mean, you know, above all else, they need to be employed.
It would be a big call to say that those guys were not hard working. I can see the port down off the balcony from here in the Parnell penthouse.
And they do a lot of stuff.
They do a lot of stuff, and they do a lot of stuff at all hours. I mean, I think something that a lot of people fundamentally got wrong when they said we would like to have a limit. I think they said we would like to have a limit to 8-hour-long shifts. A lot of people interpreted that as meaning they wanted to work 9 to 5, which is not fucking correct, because a lot of them will start at 10 at night or midnight and then work until 6 in the morning or 8 in the morning or whatever, because, you know, they will work whenever is necessary to unload ships.
Yeah.
They weren't saying we're only going to work between 9 and 10 and then we're going to have a 3-hour smoko and then we're going to work from 4 to 4.30 and then we're going to go home and for that we want $90,000 a year. All of those claims about what they were earning and how they were working, they've been clearly demonstrated now to be utter fabrications from the Ports of Auckland people. In an effort to win the public relations thing, which they decided after they lost, they'd just fire a lot of them, obviously. And now the courts have got a few things to say about that. But this solution, it seems so simple. Just give them a profit share. Then the unions would never have to complain about anything.
Isn't that, broadly speaking, what Tauranga, like the Tauranga port, everyone keeps going, look at how well Tauranga is doing. Isn't that what Tauranga did at some point? I mean, I understand Tauranga's non-union now, but they do have a...
I don't know what the setup is. If they have a profit share, then that's great.
I think they have a profit share. I'm pretty sure the employees have a profit share. I suppose they have to have some sort of, you know, even if it's like essentially a kind of a shareholders union, I suppose they must have some sort of associational organisation of the employees.
Yeah.
To make that work,
yeah.
Unless they all have individual shares or something, I don't know how that works. But I understand that sort of partly employee owned aspect of it is a big thing of the Tauranga port, and one of the reasons that they apparently do so well is that, you know, everyone's motivated to do well because there's more in it for them if they do well.
Yeah, it's been tried by a whole lot of private enterprises, and it seems to work really well if you get buy-in, you know, right up the chain.
I remember how well we all worked at IHUG once we discovered that we all owned part of the company.
Oh, fuck. Oh, but we can't complain to them because they made us so rich with that.
Yeah.
We're all millionaires now.
Yep. It's great.
Fucking liars. Fucking liars. Anyway.
I'd love to know more about the Ports of Auckland thing, but I just simply don't know how it's possible to get information about it that isn't, like, pretty specifically, point of view biased. Like, it was interesting to read. I wish I could find a link to it now. I can't even remember where I saw it. I read a good rebuttal or sort of, position thing from a sympathiser of the union with much more union input than we'd seen in the paper and stuff. And it was, just really interesting about the contrast about what was being put out by the Ports of Auckland and what was at least the union's position.
Yeah.
Very unclear. The whole lot of it's very unclear. And I think the media's done, I'm not sure if the media's done a really poor job reporting it or if the union's done a really poor job putting their side across well, like whether the union needs better media people.
Yeah.
Because they didn't do a very good job and they didn't come across well at all, I don't think.
I think Ports of Auckland are clowns, and that's why I'm kind of against them, because I think a lot of the new Auckland organisations that were forced upon us are not particularly great. I think Auckland Transport is an embarrassing joke, and I think Ports of Auckland is a bit embarrassing as well. But I'm not particularly a friend of unions. I've never been a member of a union, ever.
No,
I don't specifically think that they're wonderful things. I think politically they can be quite disruptive, and until recently, they seem to have been the best solution to having a real chance of getting a fair share.
Yeah.
Not just having to take whatever you're offered or fuck off. Look, you can't just tell us to fuck off. How about we negotiate with one another as equals, openly, and we try and come to, the best result for everyone. And obviously the union wants a better result for their guys than for everyone else. But I think that something like a profit share actually takes away and having a real input into the way the companies run completely takes away the need for a union.
Levels out that power balance thing a little, because that's the primary purpose of a union, at least in theory. Whether it works out this way all the time is unclear, but was that, to balance some power a little bit.
Yeah.
Because obviously the employer. Well, New Zealand employment law is quite friendly to the employee.
Yeah.
Like, it does make it hard, to be manipulated by your employer. And there's pretty regular stories of small businesses screwing that up in the paper, where they, terminate someone wrongly and have to give them a bunch of money and apologise. But, the point of a union is always to balance out the power of imbalance of power between the employee and employers.
Yeah, and that makes sense for large industrial type organisations. I think that for a lot of the smaller businesses, which are the vast majority of organisations in New Zealand, with 5, 8, 10 people, I think that there it's less important, because if you might be working for an asshole, in which case you won't be able to negotiate anyway, but for the most part you should just be able to talk, because you'll probably be quite close with everyone who works there at those little places. Some of my favorite companies are like that, and you can just you're probably sitting in the same room as the whoever founded the company, and so then I just don't really see much need for a union. But once you get over 50, 100, few hundred, definitely once you're into the thousands, then it becomes you're not negotiating with a human, you're negotiating with an organization with weird policies and people doing groupthink stuff, and you'll get the senior management people who can behave in really quite psychopathic ways, which are bizarrely not even self-interested but just kind of vicious and small-minded in some respects.
Out of touch is another thing that happens.
Getting out of touch, you mean, like John Key
with the Marmite Vegemite thing. No, the only time I've ever considered joining unions when I worked at TVNZ, which is an organisation of roughly 800 employees.
Yeah.
And, I weighed it up, given my situation.
A history of mass redundancies as well.
Yeah, and I weighed it up given my situation and decided it wasn't really a benefit. There was some good value on shared housing around the country, but that wasn't really a big appeal.
Yeah. I work at a university at the moment, and I have thousands of staff, and they have a huge union participation rate. But not me.
The interesting thing about being a non-union employee in those situations is you still often get the benefit, or some of the benefits of the union.
Yeah.
Although one thing I remember, I don't know if it was true. One thing I heard about the TVNZ union when I was there, well, there was three unions or two or three unions operating in TVNZ, but one thing I heard was that they negotiated a pay rise every year, which was 2% or something. But I'd heard that, you know, if you were in the union, you got your union pay rise. If you weren't in the union, you often ended up getting a bigger pay rise, was what I heard. I don't know if that's true.
It's extraordinarily unlikely.
Well, because the union pay rise was mandated and was, you know, whatever it was that had been agreed, and then other people got individual assessments. I don't
buy that.
No.
That seems, I don't know. It seems unwieldy.
It was certainly urban legend.
Yeah. I think that's the sort of legend that would be passed around by the union, probably. No, you should belong. You can't get all the benefits of union membership just by riding on coattails, which is a bit rude. And I do feel a little bit guilty about it because I get everything that they negotiate. But, you know, c'est la vie, such is life. Okay, I think probably we're on to our last story. Is it our last story?
Okay.
Might very well be.
Was it?
And this, I want to talk about Kickstarter again. Last week we spoke very briefly about, maybe last week, must have been last week, about Zay Frank and his thing where he's funded the show to the tune of like $140,000 when he was asking for $50,000. And of course, he has a big following on the internet and he's got a history of, you know, making successful video stuff that people really loved. So I think there was never any prospect that he wouldn't manage it. Although I suspect that on the inside, he was terribly afraid of failing. I'm sure that on the inside, he was terribly afraid of failing. Because, you know, when you say, hello, internet, give me $50,000, and you do it so incredibly publicly, if you don't make it to... I mean, because you set... on Kickstarter, you set a number, and if you don't reach that number, you get nothing.
You get nothing,
You get zero.
Which makes a lot of sense, because, you know, if you said, I need $50,000 for this, and you only got $10,000, then the people who gave you that money would have no way of being assured that you could do it, because you said it was going to cost $50,000.
And, I mean, the reality is that there are a lot of cases where people say, I need $30,000 to do this thing, but they've never done it before.
No,
so they are pulling those numbers out of their ass. And
people really underestimate how much things cost to do, I think.
Anyway, so what I've noticed is... I mean, now, once upon a time, there was the concept of...
A patron?
The patron, patronage. You know, we've got... there's a list here on Wikipedia. We've got Leonardo da Vinci, Michelangelo, William Shakespeare, and they all had patrons. Even Mozart and Beethoven, they had patrons. And this is super wealthy people, maybe probably royalty, who pay artists to create art. And, you know, it's the way it's historically worked. And it still works to some extent that same way. So you've got, you know, Saatchi investing in art, in, you know, to huge amounts. But mainly what we've got now is arts foundations and government grants and so on for a lot of artists, because most of them are not lucky enough to sell each painting for hundreds of thousands of dollars. And, you know, some of that work takes a long time to create.
The biggest problem I have, I like that the government does it. The big problem I have with the government doing it is then... suddenly, then suddenly art becomes a discussion of financial return.
Yeah,
you go, you know, oh, what? I can't believe we spent $10,000 on cutting a cow in half or smearing shit on a wall, whatever it was, you know.
Well, I wouldn't like to see $10,000 spent on smearing shit on a wall. And this is actually somewhere that we're going to diverge quite quickly from Kickstarter. Yeah. But this is somewhere where I think that New Zealand On Air / the Film Commission have managed to get this completely wrong. And in one sense, they are arts grants, arts funding bodies, specifically movies and TV, music videos. But the mistake that they make is that they seem to only fund stuff that is... And the requirement is that they only fund stuff that is commercially viable. So what the fuck is the point of doing it with government money if it's commercially viable? But what they do is then they choose stuff that's quite commercial, but that then fails. So it's not like we're even making amazing stuff. You know, we're not breaking any ground. We're just making stupid, low-budget versions of commercial movies that suck that no one bothers to, I mean, with a few exceptions, that no one bothers to watch. So it seems like we get the worst of all worlds.
Yeah, well, you make a safe bet, and then because it's just a boring safe bet, it doesn't really pan out. Yeah. I think New Zealand On Air is a lot more successful in this respect than the Film Commission.
Yeah.
But the Film Commission is not just commercially based, because the Film Commission also spends a lot of money funding short films and things like that that simply have no commercial value.
What they are meant to have value in is getting people to make inexpensive mistakes before making more expensive movies. But what the reality seems to be is that, well, I mean, with a couple of exceptions, people who manage to successfully go through several rounds, what mainly seems to happen is people get to make one movie and then never get to make another movie. That seems to be mainly what happens.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Or they go on to do something else.
Unless they're
television.
Those fucking back of the wire guys who make the same piece of shit over and over and over again. And it was cool the first time when they made it with handy cams and no money and broken legs.
On Triangle.
And it was not cool when they made it like the fourth time in a row and now with millions of dollars. And they were the greatest financial flop in cinema that New Zealand has ever had on our fucking dime.
Was that Devil Dare Me Too?
Yeah. Complete failure.
That was the argument I was making when they got their TV2 show. I was like, okay.
We've seen it.
Now you can take your clever ideas and bump up the production value a bit and make and it wasn't, it was just...
And then, originally they made it for, not Triangle. Was it Triangle?
Well, it was Triangle at one point. Was it something else before Triangle?
It was something. I can't remember. That was a long time ago. So they made Back of the Y TV, and it was something that they'd been making since, I guess, their student days.
Yeah.
And so then they made something on TV2, and then they remade that, basically, shot for shot in the UK for, like, Channel 4 or someone.
Oh, that's right, on Balls of Steel or something.
They made the same fucking show again with the same stunts and the same skits.
There was another stage between having a Triangle show and having a TV2 show. They did like segments on a what was it called? Ground Zero,
ICE TV? New Zealand
studio-based kind of music show.
Not ICE TV.
Did they do ICE TV? No, it was Ground Zero.
I remember they definitely did a segment on ICE TV, if not regular.
Right, they may have. But they did one on Ground Zero where they jumped off. You know, they fell off a stunt went terribly wrong. Fell off the drop tower. What used to be
that
the,
was ICE TV.
The Mount Eden Shot Factory.
That was ICE TV.
No, that wasn't. That was Ground Zero.
It was ICE TV.
It was a TV2 show called Ground Zero. It was hosted by Graham, what's his name? Graham Hill.
Well, if they did that on a TV2 show hosted by Graham Hill, they did the same thing again on ICE TV with John Bridges.
Oh, God.
Or possibly I'm mistaken. You know, I haven't exactly followed them closely. But they seem to get funded over and over again and make the same lazy shit that was really cool the first time they made it, but it's no longer cool. It's time to make something new. But they seem to keep getting funded. So they make fucking films and then they lose millions of dollars. Millions of dollars that could have been much better spent, you know, fostering new talent. Anyway.
So we were talking about Kickstarter.
Yes. So Kickstarter is a place where I'd far rather those assholes go and make their bullshit, fucking hackneyed, cheesy, seen it already stuff over and over and over again, because they might get funded the first time, but then people would say, no, I've seen that, fuck off. But what
or
we do
they might
see,
get funded again to make the same thing again by people who just like to see the same stuff again.
Oh, and that's possible. And if that's the case, then that's really cool. It's just as long as, you know, what we pay into our grants bodies is not paying them over and over and over again. I mean, if people want it, then cool, people can pay for it.
There was another interesting Kickstarter thing. I don't know if you saw it. There's a thing called the Digital Bollocks. Did you see?
Yes.
So this is in my little nerd world.
This is a 2K digital film camera.
2K raw digital film camera, and it got all the... this is a term I've come up with recently, hipster DPs. So since the 5D came out, all the hipsters are now directors of photography. So it got all of those people excited, and they, to the extent that they were trying to raise $150,000, I think, which they raised in 24 hours. And then
Hipster DPs, are these the same people who think that making a single-shot time-lapse is a short film? Are those hipster DPs?
Yes, or...
Because those motherfuckers can fuck themselves. That's not a short
film. Or
putting
a camera on a slider and shooting a bunch of pretty shots of scenery and then putting them together with a piece of stolen commercial music or some random piece of classical music.
That's not a short film!
Montage. It is, if you... No, it is. There's plenty of evidence that it is. Because it is now.
I don't think it counts. I think
but anyway,
there should be some fucking narrative.
Those people jumped on this product and funded it well above where they'd hoped to get it funded. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
The product itself, yeah, I'm unimpressed. But that's for a different podcast.
Introducing the new camera. As soon as the page loads, the screen will stop being white. Well, they got Bolex on the team after coming up with the idea. I'm not quite sure how they managed to do it.
I don't think Bolex is involved in making it. I think they've just licensed the brand and only for sale into the US. So you can't buy it from here. You could potentially buy
Look
it
at these
America.
Fucking people.
Drop shipping address.
I bet there aren't even lenses in her goddamn glasses.
You're probably right.
I think the camera looks cool.
It's not.
It sounds like they've made a terrible idea. They've got a Kodak sensor, I understand, which is quite a design. I mean, a 2K, it's, what's it called? Some kind of sampling thing.
RAW, Bayer.
Bayer, whatever. So apparently that is basically the worst kind of 2K you can possibly do, right?
Well,
it's not going to be pretty and clean. There's a reason that Red do 3K and 4K, right? Not 2K.
So, well, yeah, they don't do 2K. You shoot 2K on a Red and you get a window in the sensor. So you shoot 4K on a Red. It's got a Bayer pattern. So what it is every other pixel is green. So, you know, if you were looking along the top row of pixels, it's sensitive to green and then another color and then green and then another color and then green and then another color. And then the other colors alternate between blue and red. So essentially you get 50% of your sensor is green sensitive, 25% is blue sensitive, and 25% is red sensitive. And then you kind of, do a bunch of interpolation and you get the, you know, you can figure out kind of what every pixel is based on what the pixels around it are and some maths. But of course that means that you don't really get, you know, all of those pixels. You kind of get the amalgamation of them. The Bayer sensor is what most CMOS and CCDs, if you have a single sensor camera, it's what they use. And it's fine, but usually to get the best quality out of it, you then would, you know, resample it down, which then, you know, resamples the pixels and you get the detail kind of comes back because you're, you know, kind of making it smaller, basically. So Sony launched a camera called the F65, which shoots 4K video and has an 8K sensor. And it does that because if you have an 8K sensor and you scale it down, then you can actually get your full 4K out of it.
Right.
So you get the full pixel sampling on every pixel, basically.
But, I mean, okay, so, but the thing is, with this 2K digital camera, how much would this have cost 5 years ago? Even if it's not great, even if it's not like super amazing,
2K's
ago,
that's the other thing. Is 2K is basically 1080p, like this, you know, it's whatever. Not, it's 1920 by 1080 versus 2048 by 11, depending
something.
On what the height of the pixel is, the height of the frame is, really. So it's basically 1920 by 1080.
Your pixelation's gone away. It's pixelating a beam on your.
Oh my
there
God.
You go. There you go.
I'm back, I'm safe. It's basically 1920 by 1080. It's basically HD. I mean, 2K's.
But this camera also is relatively inexpensive. If you were a backer on the Kickstarter, you could get one for $2,500.
Yeah, and I think they're going to sell it for $3K is their price point.
80 people have pre-ordered one of these cameras. One of these cameras that doesn't exist from people who've never made a camera before.
No, more than that, because they sold it in two different configurations. So I think it was
there's
80 on one and 120 on the other. I think they sold 200 or something.
Yeah.
Or 100. I don't know.
There's 20 people who pledged $3,500 or more, which got a pre-sale Bolex camera with serial number between 1 and 100.
Yep.
And a whole lot of other stuff. And 80 people pledged $2,500, which got one of 100 pre-sale digital Bolex cameras. And I don't really see what the difference is between those two.
Something I think you get like an extra case or something with it.
Right.
So the interesting thing is like the 5D, you know, the 5D video camera came, well, the 5D camera came out in video and then everyone loved that.
Yeah.
Things that made the 5D special were high ISO. You could shoot like 1600 ISO or higher, so you had a lot of light sensitivity. This camera does 100, 200 or 400. That's the best it'll do.
Yeah.
The other thing that made the 5D special was it. Sorry?
I've noticed that as well, and I thought that seemed really, really strange.
Well, it's because the CCD they're using is designed for industrial video or security applications or right. medical imaging. Basically, it's not designed for this. The other thing that was special about DSLR cameras is they have a really big sensor, and a really big sensor means you get a really shallow depth of field. You get that supposed film look, whereas this one has a 2/3-inch sensor, essentially.
Which is not particularly large.
It is largish, but it's the same size that you had in sort of broadcast cameras forever, and they don't look, they look video-y. Everyone's like, if I shoot something with a $30,000 digital Betacam camera, you say it looks video-y, and it's got 2/3-inch sensor. Just looks
all right,
that
but
way.
That's a $30,000 camera you're talking about. This is
there's $3,000 camera. The price is good. This sort of thing didn't exist a while ago, but then at the same time, for not a lot more money, you could buy the new Canon 5D Mark III, which probably shoots better video. It's not RAW, but then who cares? Because this is RAW video is only valuable if you can get more from the chip than it can easily encode in a non-RAW video signal. And this chip is only capable of resolving a maximum of 10.5 stops of latitude, versus you can get 12 or 13 on the higher end cameras.
Yeah. Anyway, 366 backers. They've taken $286,000. There's 22 days to go. And I have a small hunch that no one's ever going to see a camera.
No, they'll get a camera. There's no, it's ridiculously simple.
Is it?
They'll get a camera. Yeah, no.
But they'll be amazed by... They'll be disappointed, right?
Yeah, I think so. They'll take a chip that exists now that you could buy off the shelf. Apparently, I saw someone say it was $350 US was how much the chip costs.
Right.
They'll take that chip. They'll stick it in a body with a lens housing. And they'll stick an SSD in it to cache the data off. Now, this is the point with record. With RAW, is you don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
RAW video is just the data off the chip. You still have to create some software to then take that data and turn it into a picture that is usable. So by recording RAW, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to put an expensive microprocessor in the computer or an ASIC or something to do all the conversion. You just have to put something to record the data onto. So they put a 256 meg SSD. And a CF card slot, basically, in a box that looks the way it looks because it used to have film in it and it doesn't anymore.
Are they using old bodies from Bolex?
No, they're not. They're making a new body.
Right.
They're just designing it based on the Bolex style, on the Bolex 16mm camera body.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it looks like a perfectly nice camera.
It'll be to me. What's that? The camera app, Hipstamatic.
Yeah,
it's like the real version of Hipstamatic video. Basically, they've come out with a camera that'll go gangbusters in that environment. Polybear Farm says it's going to be a disaster. There's more to building electronics than that. Like regulatory, they've actually got a partner that like a technology partner that is actually experienced in building digital cameras. It's what they do.
Yeah.
It's a company called Lenso.
Mm.
So they'll build a camera and it will come out properly and it'll go through all the things it needs to go through and it'll be a proper camera, but it's not going to be what people think it is. People have been, I think a lot of the backers have been blinded by the word RAW because they somehow think they want that. And 16mm seems good to them, not realizing that it's not that big. I don't know. I think a lot of people will not be that impressed with what they get, aside from the fact it's kind of funky to play with and it'll be popular at parties.
Anyway, it wasn't actually my intent to talk about that camera, but that is a Kickstarter project. What was my intent was to talk about technology podcast, camera podcast, post-production podcast. It was my intent to talk about artists who are managing to find kind of virtual patrons made out of many, many people on Kickstarter, and they're managing to get funded to make large works of art or small works of art, books and music and even movies. As well as technical stuff like stands for, the hiss from
yep.
There we go, that's better, thank you.
Sorry,
that hiss is terrible. Stands to attach your the glyph that attaches your iPhone to a tripod or whatever, and all sorts of junk like that. But there's a whole category for artists who are being funded on Kickstarter, and it's actually really cool to look through their work. Some of it is just kind of okay, whatever. Good for you. You have a paintbrush and you went to art school.
Yep.
You and, 100,000 other people that year. But then you get, and I don't know that this woman is particularly good. Her name's Molly Crabapple, and she's managed to get a bit of publicity lately because she's managed to get $56,000 of funding for her to fund her art show, and that includes people who've paid over up to, I think, $8,000 for one of these levels. Of course, the $8,000 gets you a 6x4 foot painting from this exhibition that she's putting together, and the lower levels get, you know, various things, small sketches and little watercolors and all kinds of things, all the way down to pretty much nothing, you know, access to a live stream. Wow, that seems really exciting.
There was freaked out my thing there. There was a I don't know if it's still there. There was a Kickstarter to buy Kickstarter.
Yeah, I saw that.
Is it still there?
I don't think it could not be there, because the only way you can get on there is if you're approved.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. Oh, there you go. It's still there. He has currently... Oh, no, it's not live.
Right.
The project is not live. Why is the project not live? He has no backers, anyway. I don't know why the project isn't live. My name is Eric Moneypenny. I would like to raise money to buy Kickstarter. Worth of the Web estimates the Kickstarter's worth is $18.6 million. Therefore, I estimate that I will need at least $19 million to make it happen. For $100, he will personally autograph your Kickstarter. For $2,000... he will help fund your web series. For $5,000, he will help make your indie movie, You Deserve to Be a Star, and will probably go on to a ton of festivals where you will win many awards. And for $10,000, you get to have a pizza party with him, Eric Moneypenny, the new owner of new owner and CEO of Kickstarter.
Right.
So that's good. but yeah, it's for some reason the project is not live and it has no backers.
I think we've just been asked to talk about a new story from the Herald. $10 a week compo for stabbing. A man who stabbed a Christchurch couple in a frenzied attack has lost an appeal to have his jail time reduced. But Christopher Barry Story, which is a terrible name, has won a legal argument to cut the reparations he was due to pay his victims from $5,000 each to just $500 each. The victims
what's the argument?
The victims whose identities have been... I don't know because I haven't read this, so I'm reading it now for you. The victims whose identities have been... This was given to us by the chat room only moments ago.
Not just the chat room. Leighton.
Leighton from Christchurch. It's a Christchurch story.
Yep.
Nothing if not provincial. The victims whose identities have been protected by the courts will received... Congratulations, Peter. Received $10 a week...
You could be the sub-editor for the Herald.
I could. $10 a week over the next year from the 21-year-old who has devastated their lives. The Hornby couple, both stabbed by Story with an army-style knife with a 10-centimetre blade. That seems quite small.
Yeah.
It's small if it's not going into your body. I mean, I'm not saying that they weren't horribly injured. But when you say army-style, I think like a Rambo big, you know, like a 25...
How long? Those aren't that long, though. They'd be 10 centimetres. It'll be that sort of K-bar style knife would be what they mean. But anyway.
Yeah. Maybe they mean 10 inch. This might be a person who just doesn't know her measures. I mean, she does work for the Herald after all. They no longer feel safe in their home, suffer sleepless nights, and spent many weeks in rehabilitation. And I completely understand that, not feeling safe in their home. I mean, I've never had a home invasion and been stabbed. But no. I remember being burgled in Ponsonby.
Right.
You know, it sucks. You know, it's very easy not to feel confident in, you know, in your safety in your life. And I think that you know, that's why we lock people up. That's why we punish people and try and stop people from doing wrong things in the first place. The wife, who was savagely stabbed 6 times, could no longer spend time with grandchildren. So she's a grandmother. Or perform day-to-day household chores after the night attack, which was stopped only when her teenage son threw a pot plant at Story, which hit him in the head. So Story is a fucking dickhead. I think it's safe to say that. But now...
So is there anything about what the reason was?
Now, 8 months after Story was jailed for 6 years, 9 months, he won his appeal to have the compensation to the victims reduced by $9,000. He was originally ordered to pay $5,000. Court of Appeal has ruled, blah, 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 $10 a week. Despite the undoubted, this is Judge Simon France in his ruling, despite the undoubted emotional harm suffered by the victims, a total of $10,000 reparation was too high and unrealistic, given Story had been unemployed before the attack and will spend at least 3.5 years in jail. So
fair enough. I kind of understand that it would be kind of hard for him to make the payments.
Yeah, he's got no money, he can't pay.
Yeah,
but I mean the reparation I don't think is the important part anyway. I don't know that justice should necessarily be about giving the victim something. I think justice is meant to be, I think, impartial, and it's about society punishing or rehabilitating someone. It's not about, I mean, so you've got restorative justice, obviously. It's a particular kind of thing. You know, if you steal from someone, you need to make them whole again. But in the case of a stabbing, how do you make them whole?
I'm pretty sure the guy who broke into our car and was supposed to give us money never did. So, restorative justice.
It's bullshit. All that bleeding heart bullshit. I just don't think it really works.
I think he moved to Australia.
Right. That'll explain it.
Yeah. So they just, it's 5,500, like, it doesn't, like, the dollar amount's kind of meaningless.
It's not important. It would be worse if he had had his sentence reduced.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not particularly outraged by that. It was presumably impossible that he, unless he was going to pay it over 10 years instead of 1 year at the same rate, it was presumably impossible that he'd be able to pay it anyway. I mean, I don't know. Do you get monetary allowance when you're in prison? Probably not.
I just don't see why you would. I mean, you're fed.
No, I mean, you don't need money when you're in prison.
You don't have to pay rent. You don't have to pay a power bill. Not in New Zealand, anyway. I understand that in some countries you do have to pay for things like food. And so you have to find a way to get family outside to send money in. But that's, you know, a developing nation sort of a thing.
Yeah, it seems a bit like a standard outrage story, but I don't think there's much in it.
The woman received a punctured lung and muscle damage to her chest. The man's stab wound went right through his shoulder and exited by his armpit.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Well, I hope they got all the care they needed and can continue to get the care they need.
The judge said the victims could easily have been killed. He also said that Story's probation report said he was intellectually slow and had been bullied at school. Well, now, bullying is no good, and I think that, you know, that needs to be put an end to. But diddums, just because you were bullied doesn't mean you get to stab these people just for, you know, having the audacity to be the neighbours of a place where you're at a party and you decide you want to steal a pot plant and get busted doing it. The dude, intellectually slow, I don't think even quite gets started on this guy's problems. He's all kinds of bad words that I've sworn I won't necessarily say this season. Anyway.
Good.
I think that's the last of the news.
Yeah, it's done. What else is good? Do we talk about Auntie? Do we talk about... we don't do Urban Dictionary Word of the Week anymore after the incident.
Urban Dictionary! No, we don't do Urban Dictionary Word of the Week. Hey, Dylan.
Yeah.
Do we even do this anymore? Do you want to be able to stream Hulu or BBC iPlayer, even though you're not currently in America or the UK?
No, not really.
Right, fine.
Cool. Wouldn't be bad.
Oh, okay. Do you have some reason for wanting people who try to look at your... I could have continued. I should have thought. Let's do that again.
Okay, sure.
Do you want to be able to stream Hulu or BBC iPlayer, even though you're not currently in America or the UK?
No, not really.
Well then, do you have some reason for not wanting people who try to look at your internet connection to see that you're in New Zealand, but instead say that you're on some anonymous IP address in Canada, Sweden, France, England, or America?
Porn?
Or Russia? maybe porn, but I don't really see a reason for
that. Yeah, that sounds good. Yep.
I don't think... Look, if you're the sort of person who uses the sort of porn that requires... that requires hiding, then I do not want you to sign up for the service. What I want you to do is go into therapy. Dylan, obviously I'm not talking to you. What I want you to do, hypothetical person listening at home, if you're looking at porn which is considered illegal in New Zealand... Stop looking at it. Go into therapy. What you look at and get your jollies out of, you shouldn't be. You're sick. You're disturbed. I'm really sorry to be the one breaking this to you. But for everyone else, what you could do, you know, because the government might be looking at your IP address and trying to figure out what you're doing. Let's say trying to talk to your auntie in another country, but you don't want people to know where you're talking to her from or that you're talking to her at all. Let's say that.
You
can tell them to mind their own fucking business. And let me tell you how. You go to discourse.co.nz/VPN and you sign up and you get a VPN and it makes it amazing. You get encrypted tunnels out of New Zealand from your home IP address all the way through your ISP, who can no longer look at what you're doing, past any government filters, which we know are already in place, and out to another safe country from which you can talk to your auntie, your beloved auntie. Definitely not anything prurient or illegal. Just, you know, you want to be private. And you want other people to keep their beaks out of your business.
That sounds splendid. Is it very expensive?
It's surprisingly inexpensive, depending on what you consider as expensive. I mean, it's like $12 a month or something.
Let's put it in the scope of coffees, and specifically maybe like a medium-sized takeaway latte from your neighbourhood cafe.
I don't even know what those cost anymore.
Like $3.50 maybe?
Then you'd get three or four of those.
Okay, cool. So it's like three or four coffees a month.
A month, not a week, a month. So, you know, a coffee a week.
Yep.
You can still actually have the coffee.
What did you say, like $12.50 or something? It's something
like that.
So maybe that's also like a...
But if you pay for a longer period, you get it for cheaper.
A takeaway curry?
Takeaway
curry at Naan Bread?
Maybe at like a food court or somewhere bad.
Oh, yeah, no, fair enough. Yeah, no, that's a good point. At a proper restaurant, so it's like less than a curry. It costs less than a curry a month.
Less than a curry a month.
So instead of you just substitute value. One of your monthly curries for tuna noodles, and you're good.
And I don't know about you, but I find my auntie to be extraordinarily entertaining, and the value of interacting with her to be far more valuable.
Actually, the strangest thing happened the other day. My auntie, 50. Not my auntie, but my wife's auntie, so my auntie-in-law, came over, and instead of bringing me some tapes, I gave her some tapes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Astonishing.
Tapes of what?
Some videotapes of Sons of Anarchy that I'd videotaped.
Oh, Sons of Anarchy. It's very cheesy. It's not as dirty as it should be, considering they're scumbag, bottom-dwelling, gun-running and drug-running.
Yeah, you don't get the... Like, even... Suddenly you mention that. It has some extreme violence, but it does not have much of the dirtiness.
Yeah.
It's not... Like, even I remember Outrageous Fortune had dirtier, sexy times at scenes than I've seen in Sons of Anarchy, but then I haven't been watching that much of it.
I feel like they should just be greasier somehow. Grimy.
Right, yes, they're too clean.
Yeah.
Mm. I saw TV3 was giving away some Sons of Anarchy sweatshirts today, but sadly they don't have the Sons of Anarchy, like the patch. They should have that on the back of them, but they don't. They just have like an SOA on the back of them, which is...
Weak.
Not as cool.
Weak.
But less likely to get you beaten up in the wrong place by someone who completely misunderstands your jacket. Sweatshirt. What is your auntie like? What's she been into?
Well, Community.
Back on here in the States.
She told me that it was actually kind of a bit more of the same, and a bit boring, frankly.
What? What, generally the new one or altogether?
No, the new one.
Oh, okay.
Just not like, wow, this is so great. Because, I mean, in a world where we've seen Black Mirror episode one, you know, Community is just sort of, oh, well, that's funny, but, you know, it didn't exactly...
Maybe it just needs to ramp up again, because, I mean, there were some great episodes of Community that I have seen.
You're talking about the paintball episodes?
Paintball episode, the Halloween episode.
Where they turned into zombies?
Yeah, that's right. Something like that.
After eating the MRE meat.
That's right, the special meat.
Special meat. Black Mirror, actually, speaking of Black Mirror, we could talk about that.
Describe it in three words.
Television program.
And?
Good.
Okay, nice. If I'd given you, would 140 characters help? Would that be better? Just tell me what it is briefly before we get into detail. All right, shall I quiz you? Genre, broadly speaking.
Near future media commentary.
Okay.
It produced, yes and no, not really. Maybe comedic, but not comedy.
Okay.
A little bit real for that, and always, you know, some element of harrowingness. That's not really a word, is it? Charlie Brooker. Everyone likes Charlton Brooker from Screen Wipe, which was a media
and
media
news
TV. Yeah, I haven't really watched that so much though.
Right.
Only Screen Wipe. Anyway, I think he's the producer. I don't know how much of it he wrote. But it's three separate stories related only not by characters, but in the way that they look at maybe how we will interact with media and technology in the near future as it pervades our... I mean, it's basically, it takes how we use stuff now and turns it into a bit of a caricature.
Okay.
And the first one in particular is absolutely extraordinary. The second one, I didn't like so much. And the third one, not quite as good as the first one, but still pretty great. I'm not going to give you details, though, because if you know about what's going to be in it, it's kind of too spoilerific.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's good. So awesome then.
Yeah.
I should contact my British auntie and tell her to send it to me.
Black Mirror. 3 episodes all up in total, and
that's the whole lot, is it?
That's all. That's it.
I love the British small series thing.
Well, it makes it easy to catch up.
Yeah.
When you receive the box of VHSs.
What else you got?
A lot of things.
Okay.
There's a whole lot of stuff we could talk about. Maybe we could save them up and speak about them over the next 24 episodes of the season. That seems like an awful lot. Actually, maybe I should never think about
don't think ahead.
How many episodes there are before we can take another
break. Live in the now.
I guess I can have a look at the box of
do you know what's cool? I don't know if it's cool. I haven't decided. I've watched one episode of the US Celebrity Apprentice.
Yeah.
Which I received on a videotape via FedEx. And the only reason I started watching it is because I started listening to that podcast that I mentioned last week, which is the Penn Sunday School one with Penn Jillette. And I started watching it because he talks about it sometimes and I wanted to know what was going on.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all I've got. I just watch that sometimes.
All right. Well, I will tell you about a couple of different shows then. Napoleon Dynamite. Everyone knows it's a movie, but did you know that it's an animated series as well now? You've muted yourself.
I heard,
it sounds really weird.
I have, because I was just talking to my wife, who's just heading off to bed because she maintains normal hours. And for some reason, I don't need sleep.
We're almost finished.
I know. I won't whinge in the morning. I'm happy. I don't need sleep. I might whinge in the morning.
Well, that is a very lucky characteristic for someone with 3 small children.
Yeah, no, I mean,
an actual baby.
That helps acclimatise me. Do you know what? I haven't, it's not on yet, but I'm kind of looking forward to it.
Oh,
maybe. I'll give you a hint. It's a colourful short person. 2 words. This is pointless. Why did I do that?
You're going to, what?
It's Red Dwarf. Red Dwarf. They made a new series of Red
Dwarf. No. Because, I mean, there was a special a couple of years ago that was just so terrible.
That was the Red Dwarf Back to Earth thing. That was kind of lame. But as I understand it, they've just gone back and basically made more Red Dwarf, but like not that weird, slightly. The Back to Earth one was weird because they were Back to Earth, but Red Dwarf, the TV series, existed.
Yeah. So it's very meta.
It was a bit like, I don't know, whatever the word for that is, just strange. But this one, I think, is just normal Red Dwarf, kind of like we remember it.
Which is quite badly dated.
Yeah, so I guess maybe slightly less dated. I don't know. It's kind of weird that you think it was, nearly 20 years ago, I suppose. I don't know when it was out, but it must be maybe more than that. And they've got the same people playing the same characters.
Yeah.
Weird. Anyway, I suppose Crichton's good. He's not going to age.
And even if he did, you wouldn't be able to tell.
No.
Other things that we could talk about. Comic Book Men. Which is, you know, it's in the same vein as, what's it called, West Coast Choppers, or what's the one with the guys who make guns?
American Gun Making Guys.
Yeah, whatever that is.
Sons of Guns.
Sons of Guns. It's the same as that. It's a bunch of, except they don't make any guns or any cars, motorcycles. They sit around in Kevin Smith's comic book shop.
Paulie Senior's on The Apprentice Junior, by the way, just saying.
Sorry, who?
Paulie Senior from Orange, from America.
The guy with the moustache?
Yeah, the guy with the moustache.
He's terrible. I hate that guy.
Yes.
So they sit around and they talk and they're incredibly nerdy and they have people come in and try and sell them stuff that they've got, you know, out of the attic or whatever. And it's a bit awkward. And I mean, I was told to expect something extremely bad. And it's not bad. It's just not
good. I don't know why. And then I was like, because at first it starts out like a little podcast thing, doesn't it? Like kind of starts out like a video podcast and then it goes into, I guess, reality in this shop or something.
Yeah.
I watched it for like 5 minutes and went, you know, I'm just not digging it.
Yeah.
I didn't finish. Don't know. There you go. Right. Television. Awesome.
Drug in the Nation. Breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. Something else we could talk about is Awake, which starts in New Zealand. On Thursday night.
What's the series Touch? Have you heard anything about this?
That's what I mean, Touch, not Awake.
Touch.
Awake is different entirely, and Awake, I think, is quite good. Touch is Kiefer Sutherland as Daddy, and his son is, you know, we assume that he's autistic, but very quickly in the first episode, is it spoilers?
I don't know. Have you seen the first episode?
Yes.
I thought it was all within, like, I thought it wasn't even starting in the States until, like...
Why would that stop my auntie? She's got hookups.
See you. Okay. All right, fine, carry on. That was a big thing about it. I thought the whole point of this was it was going to be, you know, kind of worldwide within days of each other.
I've got the tape I've got the tape right here. I mean, what can I tell you?
I totally believe it. I see on IMDb the release date's apparently 25th of January, but then again...
That sounds about right. Let me tell you when this package arrived.
Was this... Maybe that was just the pilot. Okay, that was the pilot, 25th of January. And then the first episode is March 22nd, which is, 3 days from now, US time. So, as I understand it, it screens in the States on... When is that? 3 days from now. It's like 22nd is Thursday night.
Yeah.
And we see it here on Sunday.
Right.
But I guess that means we must not see the pilot unless they're going to be a week and 3 days behind.
I think that episode one is just a re-edited, maybe with some slightly reshot sequences for the pilot. That's
okay,
my prediction.
Sure.
Anyway, let me tell you about the pilot. So the father of the boy that kind of is the central, the pivot of all the stories, is Kiefer Sutherland, and he works in an airport. It's not really important what he does. They don't even really go into it.
Does he beat people up and shoot them and stuff?
No, he seems to be like maybe he's a bag handler or something in the back room, you know.
A dude.
The hidden away sort of area. And it starts off with him getting a box of lost and found phones, which he likes to get for his son, who's quite technical and likes to play with them. But his son is, we assume, autistic and, you know, messes around with them. But we also see that one of these phones... was actually accidentally dropped out of the bag of a traveller who had just been in Japan or who even knows where. And he happened to have the only pictures of his dead daughter or son. And he's away from his wife, like on the day of the anniversary of the death and so on and so forth. And the little boy, the son, ultimately it turns out that, I mean, it's created by Tim Kring, who's the Heroes guy.
Yeah, right.
And so ultimately it turns out that he has an eerie power. And we don't necessarily need to go into exactly what that involves. But let's just say that Kiefer Sutherland has to do a bit of running around.
Shooting people?
Not that I've seen. Maybe that will come later, but he doesn't seem like the sort of person that would even have a gun. He's a solo father with a widower, who's the mother of the boy is dead. Anyway, so there you go.
So not
I, thought it, I thought it seemed
but
quite good. I thought it seemed quite good. And there's lots
that's
of like the interconnection stuff. Like they had, I don't know what the Heroes turned into because I had to stop watching it because it turned so god awful. God, it turned bad. But to begin with, they had like interesting linkages between the different stories of the people. And what we definitely see in the first episode is that internationally, with people kind of having connections, through the internet and through. Phone conversations and so on. People interact from country to country, including from Iraq and Japan and other places. They're just kind of, you know, the stories intertwine with one another.
Okay.
Anyway, that's Touch. Awake, quite different. It's about a man who, he's a police detective, and he has a car crash with his wife and child, wife and teenage son in the car.
Yep.
And he wakes up and his son is dead and his wife is healing. And he goes to sleep and he wakes up and his wife is dead and his son is healing. And then he goes to sleep and he wakes up and I can't remember what the last one I said was. But basically, whenever he sleeps, when he wakes up again, the opposite is true. And he can swap back and forth between these kind of universes, these realities.
Yeah.
And he can never tell when he's really awake. And when he's dreaming, or if everything is a dream, or if it's real, and he's got like police mandated psychotherapy on both sides, trying to convince him that no, this is the real reality, and here's why. You know, would you know this thing if this was a dream? And it's like, well, no, I wouldn't. But yeah, anyway, and also like clues from the cases seem to cross over back and forth. And so if someone, you know, a really important witness dies in one universe. One awake state, he can then change over to the other one by just going to sleep, and he can then talk to that person and maybe get an answer from them about how to solve it. And of course, what this means is that the people around him think that he's completely out of his mind, but they seem to be right decisions, so why do people have a problem?
And both sides of his weight, everyone thinks he's crazy.
Do we want to do more? Because I can do literally 84 more of these just on pilots.
No. Look, people are crashing their cars. How long have we been going? Seems like forever.
Excellent question. The card is just filled up, so the rest of this is going to be low-quality audio.
Great.
So over 2 hours anyway.
Okay. Well, I think we leave it there. Call it a day. We can talk about some more next time, because I've got nothing. I'm not getting anything new from my auntie.
You're listening to The Weekly Show with course.
Sorry, we're using that one.